With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast. I am Ed Mallion, as ever, sports editor of The Independent, and alongside me today, two European football experts, I believe is the exact phrase we like to use. First of all, returning from having done two Champions League quarterfinals in the last two nights, is Jack Pitbrook.
Hi, Ed, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? A little travel weary.
Yeah, I'm just about hanging in there.
And alongside, dare I say that this is a first podcast appearance for Jack Rathbone, is that correct?
It is, Ed, yeah. Thank you.
Jack Rathbone on the pod today for the first time. Don't screw it up or you'll never get invited back. They're the rules. That's why, for example, Luke never comes on. First things first, Champions League. Last night, an extraordinary evening. Jack Pitbrook, sorry, it's two Jacks, I just realised, so it's going to get confusing. You were there. You were at, where was it? The Etihad.
Yeah.
For what can only be described as one of the wildest Champions League nights I can remember in a long time.
Yeah, I can't really remember a game like it. I mean, the obvious comparison is Man City 5, Monaco 3, but of course this was much bigger than that, not least because it was a quarterfinal second leg rather than the last 16 first leg. You don't often get games that have not only that many swings in terms of, seven goals on the night and Spurs going through, City going through, Spurs going through, but also within that, the swings of the Sterling disallowed goal, the potential Llorente goal being disallowed, which of course it wasn't, it was upheld. So in terms of the back and forth and the up and down of emotion, it was incredible, and I've never really seen anything like it. But I guess the bigger picture, if we zoom out, is it's a disaster for City. It's an absolute disaster for City because their quadruple dreams are over. Guardiola, as we know, is obsessed about the Champions League. Last year City got 100 points in the Premier League. They were obviously good enough to win the Champions League, but they got splattered by Liverpool in the quarterfinals. This year, again, City are clearly good enough to win the Champions League. Again, they've gone out in the quarterfinals. Like when Pep was at Bayern, people used to say he had this kind of semi-final curse where even though they were probably the best team in Europe over that 3 year spell he was at Bayern, I think they were probably better than Real Madrid.
They're very good, yeah.
Better than Atletico, better than Barca over that 3 year spell. And yet he couldn't even get to a final. With City, he can't even get to the semis. And I think City are, like, give or take, as good as Pep's Bayern team were. And that's really interesting. Like, I think the piece that I wrote immediately from the game, I said that I kind of pinpointed the two away goals that City gave away with through the Aymeric Laporte mistakes, which were very uncharacteristic mistakes right at the start. And I said, well, you know, maybe this is the kind of classic Pep Champions League wobble, which we've seen a lot of over the years at City, but also at Bayern. And that the way that Pep coaches means that his teams have these kind of moments where they go a bit haywire. And perhaps that's like the root of why this went wrong and why City screwed it up.
Do you think he got it wrong? Just the first leg, they were quite conservative.
Yeah.
When really, like, the away goals would have been hugely crucial. And then this leg, they went full out attack, which essentially gives Spurs the opportunity to score more away goals, which in the end proved to be the difference between the two teams. Do you think that in that respect he got this whole tie wrong?
Well, I would disagree with you about the second leg.
That's fine. In
the sense that I thought City were fantastic in the second leg, and while they did give away, well, they gave away three goals in the end, the goals they gave away were through individual mistakes rather than being too tactically open. I kind of half agree with you about the first leg because obviously the Guardiola selection didn't work. But I do think that maybe that was the... I think it was probably still the right idea for that game. I think that given the injuries that City had and the tiredness and the focus they wanted to have on the Crystal Palace game coming up, it kind of made sense to play a more cautious game. And of course, they missed a penalty. Like, if Aguero had scored that penalty 10 minutes into the first leg, then, I mean, who knows what would have been the score in the first leg. But I'm sure we'd be having a very different conversation this afternoon.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in terms of a contrast between last season and this season, as Guardiola almost caught in two minds, and next season therefore becomes even more fascinating as to how he approaches the Champions League. I mean, if he played this season over 10 times, I think City probably advanced to the semi-finals on half of those occasions and maybe get to a couple of finals. So maybe it's a case of still bad luck. I mean, you've seen sides like Chelsea in the past just really knocking on the door so many times, and when eventually they did break it down, it was perhaps with a lot of luck and maybe one of their worst sides of that previous decade. So it's interesting now for me as to where Pep goes with his team. Does he tinker with it a lot over the summer, or does he just persevere and hope that luck sort of shines on them next season?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point about the importance of luck. Jonathan Wilson did a very good piece in The Guardian this morning, which I'd recommend reading, which was kind of like different from the angle that I took, but I think I probably ended up agreeing with it, which was pointing to the importance of luck, saying that, yeah, like Pep hasn't won the Champions League since 2011. And he, as he says, like, yeah, guys, I'm a failure in this competition. But his teams have been really unlucky. There have been so many moments, whether it's like Chelsea against Barcelona, whether it's Bayern against Atletico, Bayern against Barca, Bayern against Real Madrid.
City. Volcanic ash cloud.
Yeah, like there have been a million different things which have conspired to, like, lots of little details which have added up to mean that he hasn't had the record that he should have done. And it's not, like, you can't always explain the events that happen on the pitch because a manager is good or bad. Like, there is lots of random variation in knockout football.
The other thing I guess we should talk about is...
Spurs, who won?
Yeah, well, no, sorry. Okay, two things we should talk about. One, we should talk about Spurs because, I mean, this is enormous for them. And I think that all the talk about, you know, Pochettino hasn't won a trophy. He hasn't won a trophy yet. Like, we hear it every single time. But you're looking at what he's done with Spurs now with a net spend of whatever it is, like £1.5 million per year over the last few years. And you're looking at that club and you say they've got a brand new stadium, they're in the last four of the Champions League against Ajax. Now, some people will say that's winnable. I think it's a 50-50 tie for me. I think Ajax are a really good young team, as we'll get onto later on. Spurs are a very good team. But we're looking at Spurs now. If they get the top four in the Premier League, which I think they're going to now, they kind of came over that wobble with the win against Palace and then kicked on against, was it Huddersfield at the weekend? They're in the last four of the Champions League, potentially a final, potentially winners of the Champions League. This is actually Pochettino's big breakthrough season. And it again highlights how ridiculous it was of Manchester United and Real Madrid to just go with the kind of the easy job, basically, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Zinedine Zidane, when you like to think that, you know, Pochettino now has outshone most coaches in Europe this season.
Yeah, it's an amazing achievement for Spurs. And I completely agree with you that it's like of the same level as winning the Carabao Cup or even winning the FA Cup. Like, I wrote that, you know, for you, Pochettino has always been told, oh, you've got to go in the FA Cup, you've got to go in the Carabao Cup, even though he's finished like third and second in the Premier League with the sixth biggest budget continuously. Now he's taken these players into the Champions League semi-finals in a season in which they didn't play their first home game until like the 4th of April, and they have spent no money from last season, which
remarkable.
Is literally unprecedented at this level. That is an incredible achievement, and it shows a different set of skills from the skills that got them second or third in the league. Like, it shows there is, you know, they can handle big games, they can handle big moments, they do know how to manage the game, they do know how to ride their luck. Like, yeah, they were kind of rubbish yesterday from a lot of the game. Son took the two goals early on fantastically, and of course, if he hadn't done that, then City would have just wiped the floor with
him.
He's
a joke right now.
Yeah, okay. He's incredible. He's on an amazing hot streak. You just knew when he got both times when he got the ball, you
so
knew he was going to score.
Yeah,
because he's an incredible finisher from just outside the box. It's like you can't give him an inch of space. But then after that, yeah, like Spurs struggled an awful lot, and as they were always going to, because they didn't have a midfield. They rolled out Victor Wanyama, who's barely played all year. Sissoko, who is incredibly their best midfielder, went off injured. And Winks is also injured. So, like, it was...
He couldn't bring it. You almost got the impression Skip warmed up.
Yeah.
And then he thought, I'd rather bring on Llorente than Skip. Which it was wild at the time. Like, I didn't know if that was a good decision. Obviously, you know, the result in the end suggests it was. But it was a bizarre one. And the other thing that I really want to talk about this game, which I think you have to talk about this game, is VAR, right? So where do we stand on it now? Because the whole point of it is that, you know, the Champions League is too big and too valuable, and there are two like rich clubs playing that you can have someone, like, you can't have anyone getting knocked out because of a bad decision. You could still argue that Manchester City were knocked out by a bad decision yesterday. If that hits Llorente's elbow, which I think it does, then what you have is a moment of incredible joy, an absolute outbreak of elation and emotion when Sterling scores that goal late on, which has the potential to be like a historic Manchester City goal.
Yeah.
And then that is taken away because of a... It wasn't offside, I believe it. You know, I agree it was offside. So where do we stand on that now? Because that for me was... I was looking through it, and it's like, I get the people who are like, this is completely wrong. Football should be about emotion. Like, you shouldn't be celebrating a goal and then like looking back and hoping it's given. But kind of, we've always been doing that with offside flags and stuff. This is a little bit longer. And so what's more important, the sanctity of the result and getting the result right, or the emotion of the fan?
I change my mind on this a lot. Like right now, I think that it is not worth getting every marginal decision right to the millimetre if it means destroying a lot of how people process their emotions at football. I think that the emotional split-second buzz of scoring a goal is like the lifeblood of being a football fan and going to football. And if you make every single goal contingent on a kind of 10-second wait to see if anybody presses a button in a box, then you are fundamentally changing what it means to be a football fan who attends matches. I do think there's a little bit of a difference in this between like football fans who go to matches, who tend to hold the view that I've just described, and fans who like stay at home and tweet about matches, who, because I do think VAR is like ultimately for the TV viewer. It's not, it is so obviously not for the fan in the stadium, because it's a rubbish experience if you're a fan in the stadium and something gets overturned. And yeah, that currently I come down on that side of the fence, but it is a really, really difficult one. And I do realise that my argument is kind of like the flaws in my side of the story.
Yeah, I think it's make a good point in terms of removing the emotions from the game. But I think it's fair to say that there were still emotions last night in terms of when Spurs reacted to the goal being disallowed. That outbreak of emotion was almost as big as maybe had they scored a late winner in a traditional
Well, there's
sense.
A great video of Pep, you know, like the utter elation of him sprinting around like a moron, like just like, you know, as you would, like you don't care about anything else. You just, all you are is just happy. And you're watching him run around and he's just hugging anyone he can grab and he's just jumping. And then it stops, and then he's looking, and then when the decision comes, he just falls to his knees, and it's like, wow, okay, I mean, this is pretty extreme. I guess if you had a camera on the Spurs end, the away end, you see the fans, like, they can't believe it. They've just conceded this goal. Everyone around them celebrating. And when the goal gets ruled off, chalked off, like, that is them celebrating as if it were a goal. So if this is going to stay, this is kind of what we were talking about earlier on the desk, is this just, like, the new reality is that this is, like, what goals are like now. And it might be overturned. You might get that secondary goal cheer, which is the goal of the opposition, is ruled out.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we're a generation of fans who are split over the sort of the entrance of VAR into football. So imagining the next generation of fans who are totally accustomed to VAR, I think their experience of football will be determined by the secondary reaction that the Spurs fans experienced last night. So in that sense, I think it's just a changing of the guard in how we consume football. I think also, whilst Jack's right in terms of getting every single minute detail right, is maybe overboard. There's no doubt that had Spurs been eliminated last night wrongly, I think it's a decision that certainly Spurs, rather than a club like City who can replicate their success season to season, it would have haunted Spurs perhaps for, who knows, a decade or more.
There are repercussions, you know, because if that led to, say, the breakup of this current Spurs team, if this summer Eriksen goes, Kane goes, Ali goes, because their season unraveled after this point, then you could point back to this very specific thing and be like, wow, at the impact of this. So that's why it's in place. I get that. But, you know, I also said earlier on, you know, a really pure goal, like a strike from 30 yards or whatever, is still going to be worthy of that incredible celebration, you're going to know it's not chalked off. It's just that it's just a different category of goal now. It's a rarer thing. It's going to be a rarer thing to have a pure celebration almost. And that's just something we have to get used to. And if people are happy with that, then fine. But ultimately, the people that make the decisions in football are the money men. And this is a thing designed around making sure that money men don't get stiffed, isn't it? That's how I feel about it.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the money men. Obviously, vast majority is coming from broadcasters. And as Jack mentioned about it being an entertainment sort of addition to the viewer at home, I think certainly everybody who watched that game last night on television would have been consumed and would have enjoyed the spectacle of it much more had there been no VAR. So in that sense, they're getting what they want doubly. They're denying a wrongful progression of a side and also captivating an audience that maybe wouldn't have been before. I think casual football fans are sort of perplexed a little bit by this new technology and maybe intrigued to sort of to watch it a bit more than maybe they would otherwise.
Yeah, I think you're right when you said that it's not just removing emotion from the game. I overheard some City fans on the tram back late last night saying it removed emotion from the game, but you're right, it actually kind of doubles the emotion in the game.
Oh, for sure. There are more emotional twists and turns.
Right, yeah. Like, you add this whole... This is kind of the unexpected... Maybe this is going to be what makes VAR a success in the end, is that the combination of, like, City score... And then this is why last night was so unprecedented, really, on an emotional level. It's like that... The curve of City scoring, City fans go wild for, I don't know, 30 seconds, 40 seconds. Then you see, like, the referee, Chinet Shakir, hear that something might be wrong. And then the Spurs fans celebrate and City fans go quiet. And then you get the confirmation when the flag goes up. And then the Spurs fans celebrate as if they've scored a goal, which effectively they have. And you've got a whole, like, second wave of emotions going around the stadium after the initial incident. And the same was almost true for Llorente, except of course in this case the City fans didn't get what they want, didn't get the goal getting overturned. So it does genuinely add to more, like, the sum total of emotion is increased. It's just kind of spread out in a different way.
Yeah, and you know, it's a new thing that people, I guess, are getting used to as well, which is different. If you've not got anything else to add on City Tottenham, I'm happy to move on to Liverpool Porto, which there's not a load to talk about because Liverpool essentially battered the hell out of Porto, 2-0 from the first leg, and then they spanked them last night. So really, I guess it's just a case of Liverpool carrying on. And Miguel's piece from Portugal said that basically they might be the most solid side that's left in the league. They must be the most, you know, in many ways they are a very kind of efficient machine now. Klopp's kind of got them ticking over. They're solid at the back with Virgil there. The midfield has got some options. The front three is deadly. So you're looking at this Liverpool team and all the talk has been, and basically they're focused on the Premier League title because that's the one they really want. So what if they go and win this by the back door?
Yeah, I think they've sort of been in the shadow of City's quadruple hopes, and we've sort of forgot that an unprecedented double for Liverpool in terms of Champions League and Premier League is almost within reaching distance. Miguel mentioned the serenity of their performance, and it's in total contrast from last season of the chaotic approach, particularly that front three. And Liverpool now are very much in control of most games. I think they potentially lack a little bit of craft in the midfield, but the emergence of Naby Keita late in the season is adding a little bit in that sense. But yeah, just very very much controlling games now. The squad looks very happy. He's rotating nicely between league and Europe. And yeah, this is a side that now has match winners. It has an ability to absorb pressure. I think it's certainly the most well-rounded side in the final four.
So we've now got Liverpool playing against Barcelona in the semi-final. That's because Barcelona beat Manchester United on Tuesday night. You know, I think we talked about that quite a lot before and how I didn't really think it was that... I said last week, I don't think it was that great a result for Man United to hold Barca to 1-0, because then you've got to go to the Nou Camp and win, and then Barca through Messi. I mean, Messi scores a brilliant first goal. Second one squirms under David De Gea. And then, you know, it's game over by that point. So Man United really gave it a good go in the opening 15 minutes or so. They had some chances. Rashford off like 30 seconds, shoots over. And that could have changed the course of this game, no doubt. But now Manchester United are out. I mean, how do we look on their season?
I think suddenly it's dawning on not just Manchester United fans, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer himself, that the magnitude of the job and what awaits them in the coming months.
Didn't he say post-match they need a rebuild? You know,
yeah.
He's acknowledging that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's aware that the initial uptick was emotional, almost relief that the shackles have been removed from the previous regime under Mourinho. And now he needs to show that he's a versatile manager, which I think it's fair to say there's an element of doubt in that. Has he got the ability to motivate these players, to show that he has certainly the tactical nous in these games to change it? I think that's, as United have started to become unstuck, Solskjaer's ability to change it, to modify his approach is a little bit hit and miss. And I think undoubtedly this side needs major surgery in a lot of areas. I think over the two legs against Barcelona, Ashley Young's performances, I mean, it's just incredible that
they need
he's
players
there.
In a number of positions, especially in defence. But I don't think there's much more to say about Man United. I think for me, Barcelona are the favourites for the competition. But the team I'd always like to see win the competition, Jack Pitbrook, the team that you've kind of been following in recent weeks and months. I saw them outclassed by Munich at the Allianz earlier this season in the group stage, and thought nothing of it, to be honest.
Yeah.
You've now watched them outclass Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't there, but I've seen the highlights.
But you but you were.
Yeah.
Ajax Juve.
Yeah, so I did both legs of the Ajax Juventus tie. After the first leg, which was a 1-1, I thought, you know what, these guys are really good. And like, I hadn't, you know, obviously I'd seen the Real Madrid games, but this was the first time I'd seen them in the flesh. And I thought, actually, they can do it. And then, even then, I was completely blown away by how good they were, especially in the second half on Tuesday night this week. Like, the first half, they were, you know, they were in the game. They were a bit overwhelmed in the first 20 minutes, but they hung in. In the second half, they produced one of the best performances I think I've ever seen of, like, fast, attacking, dynamic, interchanging football. And Juve had absolutely no idea what to expect. Like, they looked completely floored by what Ajax hit them with. I know Ajax scored, you know, they only won the game 2-1 in the end, but they could have scored 3, 4, or 5 goals in that second half against a defence that until pretty recently was like, had the reputation of being one of the best in Europe. And they were just shredded to pieces, cut to little pieces by Ajax.
So who are you loving in that Ajax team?
Well,
then?
Individually, I mean, they've got lots of great individuals. So off the Dusan Tadic has been fantastic as a false nine. He was a good winger at Saints, but you would never have said that he could be a false nine for a team that's going to be in the semis of the Champions League. Like, he's so clever. He's so technically skillful. Brilliant movement, dragging people all over the pitch. And then out wide, you've got Hakim Ziyech on one side, who gives the ball away a lot. Like, he is pretty erratic, but he's also very dangerous. He keeps trying things, and sometimes they come off.
He's exactly that player. He's got these insane numbers in terms of the amount of shots he takes from outside the box and stuff like that. And he is a good shooter from distance. Like, he has scored some incredible goals. But he's also like, I mean, it's like, I'm trying to think of a good example, like Diamante on steroids. Like, he's much better than Alessandro Diamante, but he's a player who, like...
When we say on steroids, we mean, like...
Oh, yes.
That's, like, a metaphor like, an exaggeration. It's absolutely not an implication.
I would never suggest that Hakim Ziyech has taken anything untoward, and I'm sure his drug test would prove the same. It was more a point that he is much better than Diamante, as was demonstrated against Juventus. And he scored a great goal. He scored that wasn't ruled out, was it?
No, he didn't score. The goals this weekend were from De Ligt and Van der Beek. Sorry,
I'm thinking of the first leg. Ziyech scored a brilliant goal
against... No, that was David Neres in the first leg. Ziyech scored a great goal against Real Madrid.
I also could be confused because I was in Holland at the weekend.
Okay.
And I did watch the Ajax game. Yeah. Ajax beat De Graafschap 6-2.
Right. So you've got... And they're still in the... I think if they win their last four league games, they win the Dutch title. And they've got the Dutch
favourites,
cup as
they're favourites, yeah.
So they could win the treble this year. Neres on the other wing is very good. Big fan of Donny van der Beek, who plays in midfield and is... he's like keeps on arriving in the box exactly the right time.
He's the one they think like he's going to stay. They think he's going to be like he's kind of the captain, the future kind of core of this team.
Lasse Schoener is a guy who it's quite an interesting story. Like Ajax picked him up in 2012 from NEC Nijmegen, just this kind of stocky little Danish midfielder, and lots of people there thought he was rubbish. But in fact, he's been an incredibly important player for them over a long period of time. Like he looks like he shouldn't be very good because he's short and stocky and bearded and slow. And you think, well, what are you? He looks like someone who should be playing for like Charlton or Ipswich. But in fact, he's really effective. Like he keeps the ball well. He's always in the right place at the right time. He keeps the little combinations going, even as he kind of like trots around the pitch. And then, of course, you've got Frankie de Jong, who is like one of the, we talked about him a lot in the pod. We don't need to do it again this time. He's one of the most talented young players in the world. But what really matters is not the individuals, it's the team. It's the fact that they're all on the same wavelength. They all understand what they're trying to do. They all buy into the same philosophy. They know where to run. They know where their teammates are going to run. They can play off the cuff. They've like learned complex patterns from Erik ten Hag. And they can just... What they do is they prove that football is still a team game. Like in the Champions League, it's all about we talk about on this, and it's not just you know on this pod and in the whole football media.
Don't take down the podcast.
It's individuals. Like can Neymar win PSG the Champions League? Can Cristiano Ronaldo win Juventus the Champions League? You know.
Well, at least we answered that one.
Yeah, like that you know, this is how people talk about football. And Ajax are the first team for a long time. I guess Atletico Madrid maybe did it in their way a few years ago.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that.
But who say, actually, football's a team game. And 11 pretty good players working as a very good team together are going to beat a bunch of individuals. And that's what we saw with Ajax Real Madrid. It's what we saw with Ajax Juve. And it's so rare to see that because I know that like people will say like Leicester City. And it's true. Like Leicester City were a better team than they were individuals. Iceland, on a smaller scale, were better team than they were individuals. But like Iceland and Leicester City, if we're honest, they played like small club football. Like Leicester played kick and rush. Ajax is like, what if Leicester, but playing amazing football? What if Leicester?
What if Leicester played like Man City?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the one thing that you never see in football, right? Is you never see a small team with less individual quality playing like a big team. Like
you know, like and that's the only equivalent I can think of in the Premier League would be like Blackpool when they came up. They tried to play football.
Roberto Martinez's Wigan.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, yes. And they got relegated, of course.
Swansea a bit maybe when they came up.
At a push, but not succeeding to this extent.
Right.
And actually, in many ways, in the Champions League, this makes more sense because if you're a champion or a bigger club from I'm not saying this in a disparaging way, a smaller league like the Eredivisie. You're playing against the Graf Sharp and Heracles and Sparta every week. And what that means is that you're playing this dominant attacking football. Yeah. And then you see these teams flip to playing like defensive styles in the Champions League against bigger clubs than them. And it's like having a kind of, like a bipolar team where you've got two different ways of playing completely. So in many ways, it makes more sense to have this. I don't know much about Ten Hag. I think this is interesting because when a team plays as well as this, as a combination... You have to put a lot of credit on the coach.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot about Ten Hag. I don't know his background or where this has come from, if he is ideological or if this is more of a practical thing.
Well, I think we can say he probably is ideological because he was on Pep Guardiola's coaching team at Bayern. And he's clearly bought into that kind of Guardiola style. But I think that's a really, really good point about how important it is for Ajax that they play the same way in the league as they do in the Champions League and how they don't... That they don't go to a different type of football just because they're up against better teams. And on Tuesday night in the mix zone, we spoke to Lasse Schoener. We were asking him like what the secret was, and he said exactly that. He said the secret is that we believe in our way of playing, and we play it against whoever we're playing against. All the way back to, he pointed to their they started in the second qualifying round of the Champions League. I think they played like Sturm Graz, Standard Liège, Dynamo Kiev. So this Champions League campaign has been going since late July of last year. Like 2 weeks after the World Cup final, which is amazing in itself. But the fact that they've been playing this football all the way through the campaign, whether they're playing Sturm Graz or Juventus, shows you how deep that commitment within the group to the style of players.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think in terms of being a team that can thrive on their content, you talk about De Ligt and Frankie de Jong. Certainly, they're players that could succeed more or less in any side in Europe at the moment. But I think in terms of being able to prove that it's a team sport beyond individuals is the most impressive thing. And you talk about talent identification. Certainly last season, Monchi at Roma had his pick more or less on more or less everybody but the very top echelon of the market. And he went into that Ajax side and picked Kluivert.
Kluivert, yeah.
I think it just proves that maybe he will develop into an excellent player. But I think Ajax were more than happy to take the money, and they had players to come in. I mean, Neres, you mentioned, looks excellent. He gives it away a little bit. I think towards the end of the second leg, he was guilty of maybe giving Juventus a bit more of a sniff than they deserved.
So do you think, using that, there is a fear that the players who are inevitably going to get bought from Ajax might end up being a product more of the team than, you know, than anything else?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's exciting for them that they've maybe earmarked Van der Beek in terms of a player that can stay.
Yeah.
You talk about Dolberg, who's been there for a little while now. He might have a bigger role next season, and certainly they can lean on the academy and prove that many more can come. And we've seen the likes of De Ligt and De Jong come through. This was a side that was beaten by Chelsea in the UEFA the youth league a few seasons ago. So it's not just a side that is uber talented, but it's now the pathway and the setup in the first team that allows certainly outstanding talent, but the right environment for them to thrive. And the fact that it is a team environment, I think, helps expose the real talent that they do have. And I think they won't be fearful of Tottenham at all. And I think you mentioned, while Tottenham will relish the opportunity to make a Champions League final against a side like Ajax, it's certainly a 50-50 tie in terms of pure talent. I think maybe they may even edge it, given what they've achieved so far.
Liverpool, Barca, obviously the other one, Tottenham, Ajax. The one point I wanted to make about Ajax is, what I like what they've done already, which is they know people are going to get bought this summer. So they've already started making moves. Like, they signed the kid from Heerenveen yesterday. And they've already signed the Romanian Xavi, Razvan Marin, from Steaua Bucharest. So, like, they're restocking with good young players now, so that when the money comes in for De Ligt later on, or De Ligt, however you pronounce it, I prefer De Ligt, so I'm just going to always stick with De Ligt until I get told off. You know, someone might come in for Neres, that Everton have been linked. You're talking about Ziyech, so, you know, Tagliafico, I think his agent's trying to get him out of Ajax as well. So there are, you know, there are ways to do things, and obviously they do things well in terms of the coaching and the playing the football. But if you're also running the club well in terms of recruitment and stuff, like, that is the best way to have sustained success. That's the best way to keep Ajax back where they should be, in the final eight, in the final four of the Champions League, which is, you know, I saw Jack, the other Jack, Pitt Brook, joking about it on Twitter earlier. You know, people call it the hipster derby between Ajax and Barcelona. It's like, well, that's kind of where the viewers come, like, full circle, isn't it? You know, it's Ajax aren't a hipster team. This is one of the great teams in Europe. They are, in Holland, they are the dominant club. They are the biggest club. And you're looking at it like, oh, these are an outlier. And these are also the things that we're never going to see if we get this European Super League.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true, but it is an outlier and it is a massive underdog story. We shouldn't let the fact that, yeah, like, Ajax are a great club and they are, it's great to have them doing so well, but this is still a massive underdog story in financial terms.
Sure, yeah.
And that's why it's so exciting.
But also why we should hate the idea of a European Super League.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Only, like, footballing Tories like Miguel would like a European Super League, because it's just the big against the big against the big every week.
Yeah. Well, I do think I think Juve have struggled or have suffered because of their Serie A dominance. The one thing I thought watching Juve, and I wrote a piece about this the other day, is that they're kind of turning into PSG. Like, they're a team
they
who
have no ideas, yeah.
Yeah, they're a team. I mean, they're a bit. It's different from PSG, because PSG have always been like they are, right? Or PSG have never, like, been good. Whereas Juve used to be a really good team. Like, under Conte, they were a really good unified team which worked incredibly hard for each other and had a really good defense, and they're really hard to beat, and they were a proper football team. Whereas over the, like, gradually over the Allegri years, I think they've kind of gone, they've lost that. They've gone more and more individualistic, because they batter Serie A every year, so they don't really have to worry too much about that. They're only focused on the Champions League, And they think that the solution to every problem is money. Like, they think, well, if we can have one more big push to the Champions League, let's go and spend £75 million on Gonzalo Higuain. Doesn't work out. One more big push to the Champions League, £88 million on Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, they are locked into this kind of, like, PSG-style individualism, which I think is, totally a function of their dominance of Serie A and their focus on the Champions League as the only place where they can get any meaning, any meaningful success. And, like, there's no... That doesn't work. Like, you can't win the Champions League without being a proper team. Like, people always say, look at Real Madrid and say, well, Juve aren't great, but Real Madrid weren't great for 3 years and they won the Champions League with Ronaldo. Bollocks. Like, they had Kroos, they had Modric, they had Bale, Benzema, Isco. They're good players in every position and they knew how they worked as a unit. These guys, Juve are rubbish. I was so surprised by how bad they were over those two legs.
Incredibly underwhelmed by them. I mean, there's also the thing is that they almost are the sort of club who could do with an ideologue as a coach. Someone to actually stamp it on it and go, like, this is how we play every week, because, you know, you're going to play in this attacking way. Like, imagine, like, you know, I'm not trying to post him there, but imagine if Ten Hag was at Juve, right?
Totally, yeah.
And they're playing this fast, furious attacking football all the time. You're going to beat Empoli 8-0 one week, but then you just play the same way in the Champions League, in midweek, and nothing changes. You don't skip a beat. That's probably better. Allegri is a twiddler in my eyes. He's always a guy who's adaptable, which I think is a really good thing. I think
he's an Ancelotti.
Lots of good coaches, like exactly what I was going to say was Carletto, is adaptable, and I think it's good to be adaptable. It's good to have different shapes and to be able to use the personnel in your squad to the best of their abilities. But there are times when there are other things, you know, it's like, would you rather have Pep Guardiola or someone like Ancelotti? It's like, well, Ancelotti might be more likely to win you the Champions League, but Pep Guardiola is going to win you the league. I think there is a bit of kind of, reflection at Juventus. You know, there are two stories in Italian papers today that Cristiano Ronaldo was already considering his future there.
Oh, wow.
In La Repubblica and Corriere della Sera. So Corriere della Sera said he would leave this summer. The other one said he wouldn't see out his contract and would probably next year would be his last in Italy. And, you know, it's interesting for me because Juve have put a lot behind Ronaldo. You know, they've defended him from this lawsuit with Catherine Mayorga, you know, that they've refused to, they've basically obstructed the lawsuit from being served to him, which is a weird sort. I don't really understand how that's a thing where you have to serve someone with papers personally. But anyway, Juve have put a lot into Ronaldo, not just money. So it's interesting for me if this thing did come tumbling down, it would be yet another interesting story for this summer, because there are a lot of big clubs this summer that are going to have a huge turnover. Before we go, we should just have a little look at
How do we see it going?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Little prediction. So Spurs Ajax, which is two teams that you've covered a fair amount of recently. How do you feel about it?
I think it's a total 50-50, but if I had to choose, I'd say Ajax.
You like Ajax. Yeah. I mean, I think this is going to be a great tie. I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know as well as you two, but I'd go with Spurs. I really trust Poch. Even without Harry Kane, I think Son is in incredible form. But I do think that whoever wins this loses the final to Barcelona. Yeah, that's my. I mean, who are you picking, Jacko?
Yeah, I think Ajax will advance, but then I believe the dynamic of the tie is going to be important. I think Ajax certainly playing at home in the second leg can make a big difference. It sort of shifts the thinking almost, because certainly they've gone out into the second legs with almost nothing to lose and proven themselves without much pressure. Now, perhaps they have to seek a narrow defeat at Tottenham and maybe even have to reverse it with the expectation now on them to win. So yeah, I think that'll be interesting how they deal with beating two giants, and now as we've seen a couple of us predicting that they'll go on to the final.
Barca Liverpool?
Difficult. I think Liverpool are too well rounded to come unstuck to just pure individualism. I think certainly Messi obviously gives Barcelona a massive chance, but I think Liverpool have got many more ways of winning a tie, so I think Liverpool probably edge that.
I'm just going to go for Barca despite myself. I think Maybe I actually think Liverpool. No,
I have to go Barca for sure.
Really?
Yeah. Well, my reasoning, if it helps you decide, I think what Ratho said is absolutely right. I think Liverpool are actually a very well rounded side. I think Barcelona are not the Barcelona everyone thinks. They're, you know, they kind of can be a bit boring 4-4-2-y under Valverde, but I think everyone, you still like, it's kind of Miguel did that piece recently. Like, everyone still underestimates Messi.
Yeah.
Like, he killed off that Man United game in 25 minutes. Yeah. And United came flying out the blocks, and that could have been really problematic for them. And Messi just kills it. He just stumps in your throat. And I think he can get at Liverpool, like any, he can get at any team in the world. Like, he yeah. is the best footballer of a generation, best probably ever. And I think, I don't care who you're playing against. I mean, I'd love to see if Klopp comes up with a plan to try and deal with Messi, or if he just sticks with his own game, because I don't know who you put on him. You put Fabinho or Milner or someone to try and track him. If you let him run free, I mean, usually he'd be kind of coming off that right, running at where Van Dijk is. I wonder if they might just try and put him on the other centre back, because if he starts running at those guys, they're going to be on skates.
Yeah, okay, you won me around. So Barca
Ajax final for you.
For me, Barca to beat Ajax.
For me, Barca Spurs. And I've got Barca beating Spurs in the final, obviously. I think, obviously, you'll be huge for Pochettino's reputation if he gets to a final. And the Espanyol Barca thing will come up and stuff. But I just think Barca, and it'll be great for Messi to win another Champions League. And it is like an obsession at the club right now.
Yeah, I think it shows just how open this final four are. I think I'll just lean towards Ajax Liverpool. I think certainly the home legs as a second leg will prove significant, and I think Liverpool probably have a bit much for Ajax in the final. I think the quality will be there, and the way they set up in midfield now will be enough to sort of stunt the way Ajax have been slicing through Real Madrid and Juventus thus far.
A sixth Champions League title for Liverpool, says Jack Rathbone. The one thing I did say about that final four, I think it's a really well-rounded final four. Like, there's no interloper who I feel shouldn't be there. I think that Ajax, you could say, are an interloper, but they fully deserve to be there. So I'm not disputing that in the slightest. I really look forward to seeing how it all shakes out. There will be more talk, obviously, about that next week. We'll be looking ahead to Europa League as well when we know who the semi-finalists are for that. Good luck to Arsenal and Chelsea tonight. Because I believe that we do wish luck to all the English teams, don't we? Is that a rule? Yeah, let's do that.
I think so.
Otherwise, thank you for joining us as ever. I think we'll be back on Tuesday next week because it is Easter Monday. If you celebrate Easter, make sure you enjoy yourselves. If you don't, then remember to subscribe to Beer 52, beer52.com/indie for your latest box of craft ales. This month's one is an absolute beauty. So make sure you get involved and subscribe to Indie Minds for as few as 15p a day. You can subscribe for extra events, ebooks, newsletters, and so much more, including exclusive interviews and a live podcast, which is coming up hopefully quite soon, and the details will be available through the usual channels. So until next week, thank you, Jack Rathbone, for joining me.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you, Jack Pitbrook, for joining me.
Thank you, Ed.
And thank you to everyone else. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.